Hey, how's it going, everybody? Welcome back to the Viral Music Hub podcast. I know it has been a while. I've had quite a few things going on this year. I kind of needed a well-deserved break from doing this sort of thing, but I'm really happy to be back. And especially today, I have a longtime friend of mine who, which is awesome. We've crossed paths in many of the different spectrum of medias. And I'm glad to have him here. Who's my first show back. Welcome Austin from the band Rex Tycoon, who I am very happy to have on.
Thanks, man. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah.
It's a pleasure, honestly.
Yeah. So yeah, Austin and I have actually known each other for a good period of time. And actually used to do wrestling podcasts together and went
6 years ago, maybe 5, 6 years ago.
Seen wrestling in person together. So we go back, and he's now found himself in the music realm. And
yeah. Are you still keeping up with wrestling at all?
Oh, you know, I do, you know, and it's not like the way I used to, but I'm not as deep in as I was a few years ago, but I definitely still follow, you know.
Yeah. Same. Pretty much. I mostly keep up through online, but honestly, over the past month or two, I've been like watching a little bit more, which has been kind of cool.
Yeah. And I've kind of been easing myself back into it myself.
During the pandemic, it was pretty much like a no-go with the no crowds for me.
Oh God. It was miserable. Like Japan especially was just so bad to watch. It was like the clap crowds were just
it's tough. Yeah.
Oof, it was rough to say the least. So yeah, no, it was still while in wrestling, which is cool. You know, it's like, not like I said, not as much as I used to, but it's
cool. It's definitely cool to be back, like podcasting about music.
I know. It's like a different world now. And And I remember when you were first kind of talking about like, oh, I'm going to go get a guitar and I'm just going to learn. And I'm like, yeah totally. Man, I was like, yes. I'm like, I love it.
I feel like I honestly started, I don't know if you feel this way too, or how long have you been playing guitar?
I've been playing since high school. That's a good, like, oh God, like 14 years.
That's what I'm saying. I feel like I started late, even though I know it sounds kind of dumb in the, isn't like necessarily true, but I feel like I started late because I was like 21, 22 when I started learning how to play guitar. And like, pretty much anyone you talk to who plays guitar, I feel like, is like, yeah, I was been playing since I was 10 or even like younger than that sometimes, or like it's at least like 12 or 13, but like I feel like I got a late start kind of.
Yeah, I mean, plus for me too, like I started on trombone when I was in like elementary, middle
right school, yeah I was so. Yeah, I was in concert band too,
yeah, so
drums though,
right? Yeah, so you had like a base, you know, a reference anyway, so you totally, you basically you had an idea of like how to keep beat and all that and all that.
Yeah, because I learned how to play drum kit before I did guitar, so
I actually think that's like really good that you did that, because I think like something that, you know, beginner guitarists like struggle a lot with is keeping, you know, time and like,
yep. Yeah.
And I mean, even I, you know, 14 years later, still sometimes like mess up and I'm like, oh geez, like my rhythm was terrible on that. Like, I think that was smart that you actually did take drums first, because you probably had a way better sense of time than a lot of people totally. That start out on guitar do.
Just a different way of like looking at it sometimes. Like even just the idea of counting like one and two and three and four and. Like, I remember when I used to jam with when I used to jam with my friend who played guitar, I would be like kind of like trying to explain like the timing of a riff to him. And he'd be like, I don't hear it that way. Like in my head, it's just like, and I just thought that was funny.
It's always interesting to have the band that has like the musically trained person and then like the feel person.
And
there's always like this weird like clash of like,
you gotta figure out how to communicate like what makes sense in your head in a way that's gonna make sense in their head.
It's
pretty
like,
much is how it goes.
I always find that interesting when you get like those two types of music people together, and it's like you know, the technical person and then just the person that plays by feel. And it's like, yeah, it's very like you said, it's a lot of like trying to figure out how to like communicate what you mean and like what you want wanting.
Yeah, totally. Luckily, I'm like, I'm not honestly very like musically trained, and I'm not, my ear isn't that great either. So I don't like, I can't play by ear real well, but the Joey, who plays lead guitar in Rex, and Keith, who plays bass in Rex, they both just like pretty much play everything by ear. So it honestly makes it kind of simpler, because I'll just play it and they'll just be like, I'll figure it out. And then they just, they like first try, they just like are immediately in key. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's one of those things you kind of
making my life easy.
Yeah. It's kind of one of those things. I think you either have it or you don't.
That's what I feel like. Yeah. I'm trying.
Yeah. It's like, you can train it for sure, but some people, I think it just like comes a little bit more naturally than others. You know, I know for me, it's like, I kind of had that sort of thing since I started. So like, it was a little easier for me to play by like ear too. And like,
yeah, feel, I feel like just like growing up musically, like, like for instance, I know Keith's dad is like a, like, professor in music, and you know what I mean, is like,
right,
plays trombone, and so like just like his whole life is just growing up around. Yeah, I feel so like that plays into it. I feel
right,
like,
you grow up in you grow up in a musician like household like that. It's like,
yeah, you just pick up on it when you're like younger, probably.
It's,
you
know? Totally, it's a totally different animal. So you know, you gotta like give yourself a little leeway. some people don't have that upbringing, so you have to kind of learn it a little more on your own. So like, when did it kind of like come together for like forming the band? Like, it's like, when you started playing, like, how did that like come about when you found the other guys and everything?
So I'll just give you like a quick history of like pretty much my whole musical endeavor. I feel like it pretty much started like most people like does, I feel like, or a lot of people were in like eighth or ninth grade. Me and like five of my friends were like, let's start a band. Like, I don't even remember what made us do it, but none of us know how to play anything. I think it was because my friend Nathan, shout out Nathan, wanted to play guitar. And so he was like, you know, like, we'll all learn how to play instruments. And I had a shitty old drum kit in my basement, because my dad, like, he knows how to play drums. He's always been in like a fireman's marching band. And
oh, wow.
He hasn't played the kit in like 20 years. I mean, he plays it like every once in a while, but I mean, I love when he gets on the kit. He always plays like the same beat. He like acts like he's going to school me, but he just plays like the same beat every time. So we all started learning how to play instruments. And of course, like it usually goes, like only two of us actually like stuck with it and wanted to play music. So all throughout high school, I pretty much would just jam with my buddy Nathan in his garage. And we got really into Nirvana eventually. And we were like super nerdy Nirvana guys. It's like constantly listening to like everything unreleased we can find, and like like every interview on YouTube. And like, so eventually we start getting really into like that Seattle scene, and we got really into the Melvins. And then we got really into like, we just started getting into like stoner metal and doom metal. I'm not sure if you're like familiar with that realm at all.
Oh,
like, Sabbath and Sleep. And yeah. So honestly, all throughout high school, I was just playing music like that. But we weren't really doing any songwriting. It was just like very jammy. It was just very, just like, let's get together. And I wanted to do more songwriting, but I was just like the drummer. So I felt like I was at the mercy of like, he just like never wanted to get into songwriting really. But so eventually I'm like, okay, I'm going to go to college. And so me and him kind of can't jam anymore. And I'm like, all I know how to play is the drums. I can't really bring my drums to my dorm room in college. Yeah. So I went to the music store, and the guy that I took like 6 months of drum lessons, because my dad was like, all right, like, if I'm going to buy you a new drum kit, you got to take lessons. So you're going to learn how to play it. You're not going to, you know, waste my money and my time. And a running theme through this interview is probably that I'm not that disciplined. I honestly wish I would have taken my drum lessons a bit more seriously, because I probably would have got better. But I just like saw them as like, okay, I got to do this, so my dad will, like, you know,
right.
You know what I mean? Yeah. But the guy I took lessons from runs a small shop in Katanning, Pennsylvania, called Smale's Custom Drum Shop. Shout out Mike Smale. He sold me a bass for like $70, just like a little old like PV beater bass. I actually got it right here in the room. But so I was like, okay, I'm gonna take this bass guitar to college and I'll learn how to play bass. And then, like, of course, I didn't really like play it too much in college. Just kind of sat around. I played it a little bit here and there, because my freshman year of college, I lived with two people. My friend Keith, who plays bass in Rex, and then we had a friend named Alec who lived with us. And so they played guitar. And so we kind of did a little bit of musical jamming, but nothing too serious at all. Mm-hmm. Keith was kind of making his own thing. And I don't know. I just never picked up on the bass, but I've fast forward through college a little bit. I'm not really doing too much in music, but senior year, I end up moving into a house with Keith again. And then his friend, Jared, who's the drummer in Rex Tycoon. And then me and my girlfriend moved in with those two. And so it was sort of when we moved into that house senior year, we were kind of like, all right, like Keith and Jared really wanted to do like a band thing. And it was like, I got this bass guitar. So I was like, you know, I could play bass. And Keith had this like Squire Telecaster. He didn't like totally know how to play guitar, but he was like kind of learning how to play guitar. And so we started out and we were like, all right, like we're gonna like, it was kind of a let's build from the ground up. Cause Jared has been playing like, he's been playing drums for like 10, 15 years. Like he grew up playing in like a cover band with his dad. Like oh, wow. he's been in like, he was in metalcore bands and like when he was like 13 and 14, you know what I mean? Wow. He's like, he's a classic like drummer, like just, it's like ingrained in his like, you know what
yeah.
I mean?
Yeah, for real. Yeah.
So he was like, me and Keith always joked and felt bad because we would jam and me and Keith were like just terrible because we were just learning how to play. And Jared was like so good. And we just like, man, he must have had so much patience that first year. But eventually we're kind of doing some jams. We don't really know. This isn't really technically Rex Tycoon because we don't really know. I don't think we really know how to be a band at this point. Like we're like, okay, we're going to make music together, but we never really decided what it was going to sound like. So we kind of had like maybe like one or two songs that we had like eventually like kind of collaboratively written in a jam session that we were working on. But then eventually me and Keith sort of just naturally switched. Like I also really wanted to learn how to play guitar. So I just started playing his guitar all the time. And then I just like kind of just like picked it up a little bit faster than he did. And then so he just started playing bass and he was just like naturally really good at playing bass too.
Wow.
So it was just kind of like, well, we should have been doing this from the beginning, but yeah, so we kind of wasted a couple months, like, you know, switching instruments, but
that's how you figure it out though, you know.
Yeah, like, yeah, totally.
Sometimes it's like you gotta fail up, you know, to like,
yeah, a little, you know. It was a little bit of that. And so eventually during that first year of us living together, like I started writing songs, just it was like on the side because they were kind of like punky and they didn't really fit what we were what we had sort of established was going to be like our band sound. And so I like wrote this like little, I'd only been playing guitar for like 5 or 6 months. And I wrote like these like 3 or 4 songs and I put them on Bandcamp. And I've since taken them down just because they're so bad. But
you know, you just like never want to listen to them ever again.
Yeah, they're the only thing I've uploaded that I was like, nah, I don't need to put these up. I actually originally uploaded them under a different name. It was under the name Sugarkill. And it was just like these like really shitty recordings. I just recorded them on my iPhone with no mic, just my iPhone mic, like in the GarageBand app.
Oh my God.
I would just like set it next to the drum kit and like play the drums and like just set it, just like record the guitar amp. Like,
that's so crazy.
It sounded pretty bad.
That's but, so fucking wild.
Yeah. So eventually I was like, okay, I'm going to have this little solo punk thing because like it doesn't really fit with what we were doing.
Yeah.
But then eventually it just, it was actually kind of Keith's idea down the line where like, I just kept kind of working on like solo stuff and it kind of became a little bit more than just a punk thing. It was like more, I started incorporating more of like the indie rock influences, like, you know, Kurt Vile and like some of the songs, like I eventually started writing some of the songs that are out now, like Glue and Sour Strawberries. Uh-huh. And like we have this EP out now called Partial Frames. And I initially started writing that as like a solo thing. Because after our first year of living together, like we all graduated college. Well, I had one semester left, but Keith and Jared graduated and Jared's from Western Massachusetts. So he kind of moved home. And so we were kind of left without a drummer for a while. Also Joey had kind of joined the band too, but then he moved back to Rochester, New York for a little bit. So it was kind of like up in the air and I was kind of just doing it as like a studio project thing. Like I didn't really have any plans to do it as a live band and Keith was helping me record it. Like I was recording it at his house. And so there's this version of Partial Frames out there, like on my computer where it's just like me playing drums and me playing pretty much almost everything on it.
Wow.
But then eventually I think it was Keith's idea one day. He just kind of texted me and he was like, we should just like run with your songs as like a band. Like he was like, we should like practice these. And Keith was like, I can play the drums because Jared was like kind of out of the picture at that point.
Yeah.
Keith was like, he's like, you know, I'm like, he's like a classic me and Keith movie. He's like, I'll just learn how to play the drums. And so he like kind of knew how to play drums, but we did a couple of practices with like him on drums, and our friend Riley came in and played bass for a little bit. And so we kind of did it like that for like 2 months. And this is like towards the end of 2019. And then like almost out of the blue, Jared is just like, I'm moving back. Oh. And so one day he just like moves, Jared moves back to Pittsburgh, and it's just kind of like, oh shit, well now we got like a really sick drummer. And then like, So it's kind of like Keith can move back to bass. And that was like, that was right in like January, 2020. So that's sort of like a really roundabout way to tell you that we sort of started officially as like a, like, let's be a band in January, 2020. And we're like, okay, you know, like in a couple months we can like play some shows. And so,
yeah. Oops.
Yeah.
Yeah, about that.
Which, yeah. Yeah. So we, yeah. And then all of a sudden it's like, yeah, shows are never happening again. But I think it kind of worked out in our, I mean, obviously a terrible thing, but kind of worked out in our favor a little bit, because we just got like 2 straight years to pretty much just like rehearse. I mean, it was pretty on and off, because like at first we weren't even like meeting up, because we're like, I don't know, we're not supposed to see each other because of COVID, and
right,
you know what I mean? But like eventually it just really gave us like a lot of time to like rehearse and like hone in on like our sound, essentially, kind of figure out what we were doing.
Yeah, see, that's when you should have used Zoom.
I saw bands doing that, and I'm like, that's crazy.
Yeah, that's crazy. Let's not do it.
I just feel like, what if isn't there like a lag? You know what I mean?
That's the problems you could run into with that sort of thing too.
Sounds terrible.
Yeah, I wouldn't probably do it myself. But so you are, that's right. So you're based out of Pittsburgh, right? I just want to clarify.
I should have said that. We're based out of Pittsburgh. So we're all currently living in Pittsburgh, although I'm from Katanning, which is about an hour north of Pittsburgh. And then Keith is from Erie.
Okay.
And Joey is from, he's from Rochester, and Jared's from Western Massachusetts, kind of like the Berkshires area. So
it's interesting. So you got like two.
Because of Point Park University, we all converged.
That's pretty cool. So you got the two guys from like up north, and then you got the two, you know, locals.
Right. Yeah. Together. A little bit. Yeah.
So that's a cool little mix of people there. So like you had all that time, you know, to kind of hone your craft, like, you know, in a way, and like
totally,
and also record material, which I think was actually very beneficial for you guys too, because then, I mean, you know, to play live you need material. You know, it's like that, it's like kind of did help you in the long run, because like you guys were just starting out, and like maybe
instead of rushing into something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, you might not have been quite ready to play it live yet.
I listen back to like the voice, like, because sometimes I just record our practice like on a voice memo, and I listen back to like some of those like really early practices, and like my voice especially, I was still trying to figure out like what my vocal style was and how to do it, and I was just
you gotta find your voice.
I'm glad we were forced to wait like 2 years.
Yeah, you know, it's like you find your sound that way, you know.
Totally.
That's pretty important.
I
mean, I don't think anyone is ever ready to play live. I mean, it's just like you kind of have to just jump into it and just
It's really nerve-wracking when you've never done it.
Yeah, I mean,
luckily we had Jared, who's like been playing live for like 10 years.
Right.
I feel like he's like really like a rock that kind of holds us down, and it's like a nice like experience. Like, oh, he's done sound checks before, and he's like, you know, he knows what time to load in, and like, you know what I mean.
I think it's always helpful to have that one guy.
Yeah,
that knows.
It really is a blessing. Yeah,
has been in there, done that. Even if it's not a guy in the band itself, like, even it's just having like a guy that you know, that's
like a friend, support system type thing,
like that actually knows like that whole live music experience and how to like kind of make it happen.
Yeah,
you know,
totally.
To have that guy on your crew is like, I think it's pretty vital, yeah, especially when you're a band like you guys starting out.
Like, yeah, really
learning stuff still.
Totally. I also had like a good friend named Connor who he plays in a couple of Pittsburgh bands, like this band called Silver Car Crash, and another band called Alamo. And he's sort of like a local legend, in my opinion, staple of the Pittsburgh punk scene. But he was like pretty instrumental in like Just coming over and like teaching me like shit on guitar a couple times. And he's wow. just like a great like person that I can text and ask like anything too. Like I remember like one of the first times we played like an official, a more official venue around here. It was like the upstairs like club room at like the big local indie theater. Like it's called Mr. Smalls, where I've seen like Lemonheads and like Guided by Voices and stuff at. Like we played like the small room upstairs. And I remember that it was like the first, one of the first like, yeah, bigger venues like that, sort of, even though we played the small room. But they told us load in was like just like outrageously early. And I was like, why is load in at like 4 p.m.? And I just like could text him. I was like, you played here before. Like, why is it like this? You know what I mean? So it's good to have people like, he's like, oh, no, just be there 2 hours late. Like, all right, cool.
Yeah.
But it's just cool to have, you know, friends that like have done shit and that are like down to earth and cool, and like, you know, you can ask stupid questions too, right, essentially. Right.
Yeah. So the first show, what was it? How did it go?
So the first, yeah. So eventually COVID's like kind of clearing up and like shows are starting to come back, and we're like kind of itching to play because like we feel like we've been ready at that point. And so we decide to throw our own house show because that just seems like a pretty ideal low-key way to like kind of knock off the stage fright a little bit. And also it's like when you're first starting out, it's kind of like, how do you get booked? You know what I mean?
Right.
And we're like, all right, solution. We booked the show. And right. So
you got to put it in your own hands sometimes.
Right. Yeah. So because Jared and Keith have a house that we practice at and stuff. And so we've actually had like, I think 4 or 5 shows at this place now. It's called the Rodeo in Pittsburgh. But so yeah, it's just a little basement, but we threw a show with our friend Ben, who he's like a rapper, like a SoundCloud rapper type thing. His name's Empty Can of PBR, all one word. So we played with him. And then we played with one of my buddies from a works band called Helium Boy and the Biters. So we just threw a show with those guys. We had a pretty good turnout, honestly. There was going to be another, my other friend was going to rap too, but he got sick, so he had to cancel. But so we threw a show. It turned out pretty good. We got a bunch of footage that night. I'm probably going to upload it on the 1 year anniversary of the show.
Oh, that's awesome.
Here in November, but it's just a bunch of cool like VHS footage. But it was a pretty good turnout. Honestly, like just people were really nice afterwards, and they seemed like genuine too. You know, they were like cool. There were people from bands I liked there, so it was definitely a pretty reaffirming night. Like I felt pretty good about our set, and as good as a first. I feel like I talked like we like recorded the set, and I listened back to it, and I feel like I just like talked way too much during the set. But
I think like you probably at that point you're probably just trying to get rid of the butterflies, and you're just I need to say something to like not I could, focus I could, on.
I could hear just how nervous I was a little bit. But, I don't know. I think it turned out pretty well. So that was in November, like I forget, or like early November, and then that was when COVID was kind of like people wanted to come back and do public like shit in the public space, but like then like stuff would get canceled again.
Yeah,
because I remember we were trying to do like a New Year's Eve thing, but then like everything got canceled, like pretty much everywhere on New Year's Eve.
Yeah, there was definitely a little bit of like a, I remember there was like a spurt in cases around that time.
It was like right whenever people were letting up on like the rules and restrictions, and we're kind of like, wait, like maybe we shouldn't be doing this, you know?
Yeah.
So we didn't play again until March. I think it was, March is when we started playing. We actually ended up playing like 3 or 4 shows in March, I think.
Nice.
We played our next show at this, I guess our first official show that wasn't in a basement was at the spot called the Mr. Roboto Project in Pittsburgh. And just like a little cool little DIY space. It's kind of like, honestly, a lot of touring bands come through there. The guy who books there is really proactive in booking bands. So I've seen some cool bands there, and it's just a really tiny like room. It's a sober space. It's like very inclusive, and nice. It's a cool place to play. So we played there with our friend, Mike, Jared's coworkers booked a show, and it was honestly a really eclectic, like cool show this guy did. The opener was like this like one man electronic thing, but it was pretty like Devo inspired. It was like it was more than just music. It was like a interactive visual arts thing where he had this like screen behind him, and he would be like, like, I don't even remember exactly what happened, but like there would be like an attack going down on the screen, like planes attacking the city or something. He'd be like, everybody duck, like they're getting us. And it was funny. It was a cool show. It was a really weird like punk art show, but we played last, and I just remember feeling very strange because I was like, we're so different than every other band on the show.
Yeah, it's like, what the hell, do we fit in here?
Yeah, like, yeah. That was like the one like weird, like one of the weirder shows we played, but it was very fun because everyone was super nice, and it was honestly like one of the like a bigger payout, you know what I mean? There was like a good amount of people there and stuff. It was cool.
Yeah, no, that's really awesome though. Like, yeah, do you feel like the Pittsburgh scene is like just like in general like really good?
I think it's pretty rich. Honestly, there was just like on Bandcamp yesterday. I don't know when this is coming out, but as of we're recording this yesterday, there was like a Bandcamp, you know, like the Bandcamp Daily. It's like their like blog or whatever. Yeah. There was just like an article that was like six bands in the Pittsburgh scene or whatever. And I've seen a couple of those. So it's like the scene is getting some national attention, I feel like, because it's pretty rich. There's a lot of good bands, and it's not all like the same style either. Especially like the hardcore punk scene, especially, is like really incredible, to be honest. Like the really fast, like grimy stuff. There's a ton of that stuff coming out from here. And that seems to be gaining a lot of traction, like in that sphere. Yeah, there's a lot of bands in Pittsburgh. It's like definitely a pretty good city to be in because there's a healthy amount of venues to play, and there's a healthy amount of, you know, there's a couple colleges in the area, so like there's just always like shit happening, you know.
Yeah, no, it's like it seems like there's some good promoters in the area
from totally
what you've been saying, and like which is good, and like people that are pretty supportive and everything too, so
yeah, it seems like there's some momentum and people like know that, and they're like trying to keep it going. What it feels like.
Yeah, kind of go out and support the other guys too. When
yeah, it's pretty. Yeah, they're it's pretty like it's a good community. You know, people support each other. There's not a lot of like drama or anything. You know what I mean? Like, there's not a lot of beefs or like stupid rivalries or anything like
yeah,
that.
Yeah,
like, everyone's like chill, and everyone's nice. Everyone we've played with has been like, you know, super nice and great, and it's awesome.
Yeah, no, it's like, you know, it's like, it's kind of like, I know, stupid wrestling reference, but it's like, you know, you never want to, if you're like going into a program with a guy, you never want to bury your opponent, right? Like,
yeah, exactly, right,
you know. Totally. It's like, why would I go and bury other bands that I'm playing with, you know? It's
yeah, like... yeah, and I, yeah, exactly. And I honestly, in that sense, I even think about that when we're like playing on a bill and I'm like, all right, we're second, like we're gonna play for like 20 minutes because I don't want people to get like, I don't want to fatigue the crowd.
Right. Like, yeah.
We're not like the first match trying to go for like, you know what I mean?
Right. Like, yeah. No, I think like that's a big thing too. Like in music, is like, you gotta know sometimes, like you said, like how long to play, like,
yep.
Depending on where you are on the bill. It's like, sometimes it's like, you guys just got to give them that, like that train, that speed train, you know, like,
totally,
boom, yeah. Boom, boom, boom. But then, yeah, you're good. You're down. You're out. You know, it's
yeah, like just in general, we seem to like follow that philosophy where like just leave them wanting more. You know, like most of our songs are pretty short, and like honestly, just like no matter where we're playing on the set, we're probably not playing any longer than like 25 minutes tops.
Yeah, no.
Just because I feel like sometimes, like if you're playing, I've seen some local bands who play for like 45 minutes or something, and it's like honestly a little bit eye roll inducing sometimes. It's just like, I mean, they're great bands, but it's I don't know, it's just so long, and it's like, this isn't that kind of show sometimes, you know.
Listen,
it's not an arena rock show.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not trying to sit in the concert for like 3 hours anymore, man.
Yeah, exactly. Like, totally.
I get my past my bedtime now. It's
yep,
like
yeah, like this Sunday we're playing, or I booked a show this Sunday at it's at this spot called the Government Center. It's like a record store downtown, and they just put a bar in. It's really cool, honestly. But I booked this band from Seattle called Advertisement, who I really like, and it's just gonna be us, Advertisement, and this one guy's doing a solo set to open, and like show's gonna start at 8, it's gonna be done by 10, like boom, 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 like people, you know what I mean, people got work on Monday morning, like,
yeah, yeah,
trying to keep, I like to keep the shit moving at the gigs personally. But
you're a hero. You're a hero for that, because
and pretty much anything over four bands is also like a little questionable.
That's a lot of bands. That's a lot to take for me. That's a lot to take in one yep. show. It's like, three is like my like about my max.
People aren't gonna stick around, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
they're not gonna be there for the beginning, like, you know, it's just right. This is not good for the interest of the bands, like,
yeah
especially if there's a touring band, because like I always feel like, as someone who's like, I've been trying to get more into booking local shows just like this year too, and just get more involved in that. I just feel like I just always want to maximize like who is going to see the touring band, you know, like I want them to have the biggest crowd, because like most of the time it's like DIY touring bands. So it's people who like are more than likely losing money to come the whole way out here. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's like, I just want to get them the most money and the most like exposure and like, you know what I mean? I try to think about shit like that whenever
you're
like thinking about our set and stuff like that.
Oh, that's really awesome that you're actually getting into that part of the deal too, you know, and
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that side of things, you know, because, you know, music is much of you know, is it's the entertainment business, is also just business sometimes, and you have to kind of think about that part of it too. Like you said, like you're traveling from Seattle, go to Pittsburgh, play a little show, probably not making a whole lot of,
right? Yeah, more than likely, especially that's why I'm just trying. I'm like, please come to the show so I can pay the touring bands.
right. Like, yeah, like I don't mind about me myself that much, you know. I'd worry more about like guys that are traveling like 1,000 miles to get here, you know, like
especially because I'm not like a big promotion agency either, so I'm just like I gotta pay the sound guy a little bit of money, and then like
pretty
much just using the door money to get paid the band, you know. I don't have like, I'm broke myself, so I don't have money to pay them.
I always say be nice to the sound guy.
as long as they're nice to me.
It's a two-way street for sure.
I've heard horror stories about sound guys, but we've mostly had pretty good experiences with sound people. I mean, we've only played like, I don't know, maybe 20 shows, but like we've had some pretty good experience with sound people.
Yeah, no, that's good, because that's a vital part of the live experience, you know.
You want to
have, you know, that good relationship with the guy that's helping you run the monitors and all that.
Totally. Sometimes I just forget that I can like engage in that relationship. Like I'll go the whole show, and then I'll be like, I couldn't hear myself in like the monitors, and I'll be like, I could have asked for more vocals in my monitor.
You're like the anxious little kid. Like, I don't want to make it mad.
They're like, what kind of lights do you guys want? I'm like, whatever. Like,
you guys are good. You know, you know that stuff. Like,
yeah, wing it. Like, we got it.
That's fine. it's like I don't know what I would say to, you know, I'd be like, yeah, I don't know, you guys do your thing, like,
we've been asked that before, and they're like, they have an option where it just changes to like based on the music, and we'll be like, okay, do that.
That's
and
cool.
Then it'll just be the same color the whole time. Like, why did you ask this?
Okay, like, never mind, I guess, but okay. we'll roll with it.
We don't really care that much.
That's funny.
We're pretty loose and pretty yeah.
So I gotta ask the big question.
What's up?
When is the first LP coming out? When is it happening? Is it being worked on?
We are working on a lot of new music. I'm not sure when the first official LP. I almost have like fear of LP, I think, where it's like, I'm like almost like, I definitely like shorter releases, kind of like I was saying earlier, we like to do like pretty much short everything, it seems like. A lot of our songs are short. Like Partial Frames was only 4 songs, Dive Bar Diner is only 2 songs, like all of our releases have just been in like really short spurts. I think I'm like almost afraid if I like give everything out on one album, like I'll be like showing all my cards type thing, I think. But we honestly have a lot of new music in the works. Like Bad Habits is a single off of another 4-song EP that we're currently tracking the last song of it. So it'll probably be out. Like, I mean, we might shop it around a little bit to see if like anyone might want to like put out a tape of it for us. But we'll probably end up just self-releasing it before the end of the year. And then we're working on another split release with one of our. Another local Pittsburgh band who's really cool. I won't say more about it, but there's gonna be like 6 songs on that, and then we're working on another EP to put out after that, which is like probably like 75% written. We're still kind of jamming on the songs, but there's like 7 songs on that. So
okay,
there's like, that's, I think that's like 17 songs total.
Wow.
But it's just, it's kind of split up between like, we're going to do like a little EP here. And then like, we're going to do a split a couple months later with our like friends band. And then like a couple months after that, we'll probably put out another EP. But it'll probably be, I don't know. For a while, we were kind of thinking we were going to do a first album. I mean, I've seen bands put out like quote unquote LPs that are like 20 minutes long, you know what I mean? So we were like, we could put out like a 7-8 song thing that's only like 20, 25 minutes and call it our first album. But for some reason we like doing the EPs. Maybe we'll like eventually if we could get like a cool label to put out like our first official record. And like, I feel like we might wait for that. We're going to be one of those bands who's like, they've been a band for 8 years and this is their like first album. You know what I mean? You ever see that? It'll be like our debut LP is coming out. And I'm like, these guys have been a band for like 8 years and they have like they have a million tour tapes out. You know what I mean?
That's funny.
So it's sort of not that important to us, I don't think, in a way, at least for me. It's not really a goal we're looking for.
That's nothing wrong with that. I that's a good strategy, I think. I mean, like,
yeah, I like to just put out a little bit at once, kind of leave them wanting more, and you know what I mean?
Yeah, you kind of get like, you can kind of stagger stuff a little more too, you know?
Yeah.
You don't blow your load all in like one, you know, one sitting, and then you're like waiting for a few years to kind of come up with more stuff. And
at least I feel like, I mean, we're like slowly building an audience a little bit, but like, whenever you have, especially like when you have no audience, like say like us, like, you know, 2 years ago before we like even played live, like the idea of putting out an album to me doesn't make too much sense, just because I feel like if you drop like 40 minutes of music at once and like no one knows who you are, like there's like not that big of a, I feel like some people are going to be like turned off by that. Like, I don't know if they're like, I don't know if that's true or not, or even if people would be like willing to admit it, but I feel like it's like not as easy to digest that as it is to just be like, hey, here's like two songs from this band I've never heard of. Like, I feel like you run into like more of a odds of them listening to those two songs over and over and over again than like say like track six on like a 12 track album is going to be like just totally forgotten about and like just kind of like buried and like, you know what I mean?
No, yeah, I totally get that. Yeah,
so
that,
if we had more of an audience, I feel like I would definitely be more inclined like to, if we had more people asking us, hey, where's that LP? I'd be like, all right, I'll give you the LP.
But so yeah, kind of the slow build to it at some
point. Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah, we got some, like we have some cool stuff. We have there's a cool label in LA who's putting out a charity compilation next month, and they're gonna put our song Glue on it. So that should get us like, you know, hopefully a little bit of exposure.
Oh wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
That's actually a sick like
yeah,
that's
so
that's pretty sick, man.
At least last time I was told it was supposed to be coming out in September, but
wow,
I sent the song over and all that shit, so
that's pretty big on the other coast side of the country, you know.
Yeah,
that's you know, you get some maybe more eyes on you.
That's what I'm hoping for.
different part of the you know, Americas, you know.
Yeah, so. and we are doing, there's a local Pittsburgh label called Floating Mill Records that's like gonna help us put out like a kind of a compilation of all the shit we put out already. They're gonna put it on like one cassette for us.
Oh nice. Yeah,
so that'll be coming out. It's in the works, it's like almost done, so that'll be coming out within the next couple months. So
it's like a pseudo LP.
yeah, sort of. It's pretty much. Yeah, it's like long enough to be an LP.
It's basically like what Green Day did with their first album.
yeah, pretty much.
Essentially, yeah, you know.
We just took all the earliest, like we took like the first demo I put on Bandcamp and like the pretty much everything that's on Spotify and stuff, and just threw it on one tape. So
that works too. That's a good way to, you know.
Build. Yeah, we're putting. Yeah, we're finally getting some physical releases out there a little bit.
Oh, nice. Are you doing like CDs and stuff like that?
Actually, I'm not sure if we're doing CDs. We were originally planning on doing CDs with the tapes. But last time I talked to him, we were kind of like, honestly, we're just like unsure if we were going to do the CDs. Although there does seem to be a little bit of a CD revival. I don't know if it's like slightly ironic or not, but I'm in support of it.
No, it really is. It, you know, it was great. When I went,
I want to make some.
Yeah. Yeah. Like when I actually went to, one of my local, well, they're in LA now, but Mandala, they came back to do a show here. They're based here, you know, from here originally. And, they had CDs of their newest album, but actually before it went on streaming.
Oh,
so,
yeah.
So it like incentivized people to go buy the CD before.
That's pretty smart.
And I thought I was like really neat. I'm like, oh, okay, this is like really cool. Like, I'm glad like kind of there's still physical media being made in the musical realm, like, because
yeah,
that's been fast kind of vanishing over the years. So I'm actually really glad to see that kind of thing popping up again.
It's like the only way you can like make money, it seems like.
It's like
merchandise is pretty much the only way that you can make money.
That's the big thing. Yeah, I always tell people, like, if you really want to monetize this thing, you gotta have merch. Like, you gotta have it. It's like,
yeah, because like people aren't really gonna buy your music. I mean, it's cool to have like the Bandcamp Friday thing where it's like you get all the it's like fee free, you get all the profits, and so I think that does give a little bit of incentive to people for people to spend money on that day,
right,
on Bandcamp, because we have like made some money from Bandcamp Fridays. But yeah, it's pretty much merch is like the only way. Merch and like, you know, whatever you can make from the promoter, whatever you can get the promoter to pay you at the gig.
Yeah, and then that's never usually too much. So,
oh my god, yeah, that's the one thing I hate dealing with promoters so far. We've had good luck with sound people, but most of the like we've only had to deal with like two or three like big promoters who aren't just like, you know, like chill people. Like, there's a lot of people who book shows in Pittsburgh, like at that spot called like the Government Center.
No.
It'll be like the guy who books there is just like the guy who drums in a band called the Go-To-Beds, they're a Pittsburgh band who's on Sub Pop actually.
Oh.
They always call themselves like the least famous Pittsburgh band because like they're like, why are we on Sub Pop? Like, we have no idea why.
Wow.
But they're great. You should check them out. Totally. But like, yeah, people like him are really cool to deal with at promoting at shows. But when you get like someone who works for like one of the big like promotion agencies that like book like these like huge touring acts, it's like, and there's like contracts involved, and he's just this guy at a bar like in his suit and tie like on his laptop. It's like, oh, it's terrible. I hate dealing with those people.
Oh yeah, no, I'm not good with people like that either.
We had this one show where it was like, we originally booked it through this guy who was kind of like the first guy I was describing. He was like just a guy who plays in bands and he's super chill. Originally booked it through him. And then something happened where he like quit or like he wasn't working there anymore by the time the show actually happened. And so the night of the show, when it came to like be getting paid out and stuff like that, the guy was like, he was just like this like guy in a suit and tie. And he's like, all right, I just took over this job. And he's like, I don't know any of the details for the show. He's like, I don't know who's like agreed to get paid what. He's like, I don't know how to do like any of this. And he's just like, I got to go make this phone call. And he's just like really stressful. Wow. And like, he like laid out the term. He showed me like his emails and he like laid out the terms for me. And I was like, there was a number. And I was like, you just split this, like just divide this between three for the three opening bands. There was a guarantee for the huge touring band. And then there was like this much left over to be paid for support. And he was like, how much do I pay the support? I didn't know there was going to be three bands who were support. And I'm like, just divide it by three. Oh. And then it was like this whole 20-minute ordeal. And then he just came back and he just gave me the money that was divided by three. And I was like, why didn't you just listen to me in the first
place? That was, yeah. Like what, why?
Just, it was really easy, but just for whatever he had to go through all these like hoops to like, you know what I mean? Like, that's the one thing we've had bad experience, not bad experience, but like, I'm just like, I don't know. You know what I mean? Yeah.
It's like running in circles sometimes.
Yeah. It's much more easier to deal with like the kind of DIY level, just like,
yeah,
you know,
they've done it, been there, done that. And they know nobody wants to run through hoops and jump through hoops.
Yeah. And they just have like common sense, and it's not like a big suit and tie thing.
Yeah. Have you run into the dreaded pay-to-play scenarios?
No, we have strictly avoided those, and we've luckily like never really been asked to. So we actually just recently booked this really cool show. One of my favorite bands called Webbed Wing we're opening for, and the promoter, I was emailing him, and he essentially asked us if we wanted to help sell tickets for the show, which I was like totally down to do, but I was like almost nervous that he was like asking us to pay to play. But he was like, no, you don't have to buy the tickets or anything. He was just like, he's like, I'll just give you some tickets and you guys can like hopefully sell some more tickets. You know what I mean?
Nice. Okay.
He's like, you just give them back when you're done. But I was like, I was really nervous that he was like, yeah, asking us to pay to play.
Yeah.
I just like straight up asked him. I was like, you're not asking us to pay to play, right? Because we absolutely know. That's like, you're just like scamming local bands who don't know any better.
Yeah, it's like, we know you're desperate for, you know, like
yeah.
Yeah.
I remember we were talking to one of our like a band that we're buddies with, like younger guys, and they were kind of talking about like almost doing a pay to play thing. Like they were like considering it, and I was like, don't do it. Like, don't. Just don't do it.
Have respect for yourself, please.
Yeah, it wasn't even like a cool opportunity. I was like, no, like just don't do it. It's not even worth it. You know?
Do it yourself. Do like what you did. You know, yeah, go in the basement and just throw.
Yeah,
you know.
Oh, yeah. I was like, I would rather have your show here in this basement than like, yeah, you know,
yeah,
at that shitty bar that wants you to pay to play.
Build it through the ground up, and then you know.
Yeah, I've been like very like I'm always on the lookout for that. I'm like, no, we're not doing anything. Yeah. Like that.
You know, not to bring them up again, but Mandala here did the same exact thing. They literally played basement shows all the time, and they gained bunch of fans, and
that's the best way to do it.
That's you did exactly what you guys did, and
especially if you can play basement shows in a college area, like just get tons of kids who will come out just to get fucked up for the night, or I swear on here, but to get drunk for the night, and like
I mean you have in Connecticut too, like you have like the few of the big college towns, like you have like Bridgeport's got, you know, colleges up the butt, you know, you have like New Britain, you know, right near Newington, New Britain, right near central Connecticut, and then you obviously up near the Stores area you got UConn, and you know, and then obviously New Haven, you got the Yaleys and the, you know, everything, you know, so you know, there New Haven is like the perfect place for that stuff too.
Totally. We've only played one out of town show so far, but we have more booked.
That's another question I was meaning to ask you, like how far do you plan on going outside of Pittsburgh?
So far we've actually booked a weekender in May. We were gonna play Akron and then Columbus. It was like a roller coaster. Like, so we got the shows booked, and then like 2 weeks before the show, both the bands on the Akron bill were like, all right, like we can't play because, it was kind of COVID related. So it was fine. It was no hard feelings or anything.
Yeah.
But so I like miraculously get the show rebooked within like a week of the show. And then we played a show the weekend before that in Pittsburgh, and it was a basement show, and it was like pretty packed, and it was just a super spreader event, unfortunately. Like a ton of people got COVID. Like everyone in my band got COVID. My girlfriend got COVID.
Oh my god.
A couple people from like the other bands got COVID. I felt bad because my girlfriend's best friend was visiting from Florida, and she went to the show and she got COVID.
My god.
Took her home to Florida. Yeah, luckily everyone was all right, but like it sucked because we had to cancel our like first weekend there because of COVID.
God,
like right after I had like miraculously rebooked the show, I actually kind of like upgraded our show almost. I was like, oh, we're on a better show now. It sucks, but so we didn't get to do that, but then we kind of booked another one for we played with a really cool band called Only Sibling. They're from like Staten Island, or I think somewhere in New York. I think it's Long Island or Staten Island, but
Staten Island doesn't count.
fake New York.
That's fake New York. Fake New York. Get out of here.
I think so. I'm trying to remember where they're from, but they're really cool. They're a really cool band. Only Sibling. So they played in Pittsburgh, and then we're gonna play in Binghamton, New York with them. And we did play in Binghamton. It was really cool. I was honestly, it's kind of like the college town thing we were saying. I was like surprised how many people were there. I guess it was near a college.
Well, Binghamton it's like not far from it,
because we played in this really cool store called Stellar Human. It was like a secondhand thrift type like clothing store.
Really?
They
had
a big basement, and it was kind of just like through connections. Like my one friend in Pittsburgh, Giovanni, he must know the guy or something, because the show we played there was only the second show that they had ever had there, but the first show was with our friend Giovanni.
Wow.
So I just hit him up and was like, hey, like, what's your Binghamton connect? And he just kind of set it up for us. And it was there was like 70 people there. Like there was like a lot more, and then like a tiny basement. Like there was like a lot more people than I thought.
In a thrift store. That's a new one. I've never heard that one
before. Oh yeah, that's... it was cool. They had this little like they had like a little Tykes basketball hoop upstairs that we were like playing on in the store and stuff. And it was cool because like weed is legal in New York, so it's people like smoking outside.
It was
a good vibe.
Very much so.
it was cool. We sold a good bit of merch, and it was just like way more people there than I thought, just because it was like a college town and people just like needed shit to do on Friday night, you know. I think it was Saturday when we played.
Yeah, no.
And we were supposed to play Richmond the next night, but that ended up getting canceled too, sadly.
Oh, damn. wow, you were going to go to from New York to Virginia in this.
Yeah, it was going to be like, it was like a 6 hour drive. We were kind of, we were kind of glad that we didn't do it, because we were probably going to lose money on it.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, that's like,
booking is like, it's a wild roller coaster, because it was another one of those things where at first it was really promising, but then like, you know, some bands had to drop off, and then like, you know,
yeah, you never know.
Eventually I was just like, I don't think we really have the best bill. And I was like, yeah, it's not gonna, the venue just like was a little too expensive, and we're just like, yeah, I think we're just gonna cancel. But
do you find that's like really stressful, like that you kind of don't know from day to day, like how that's gonna change?
It's sort of stressful. I mean, I honestly kind of have mostly enjoyed being de facto tour booking manager and like de facto manager of the band, like sending all the emails. It's kind of fun, honestly. I kind of like doing it, but it's pretty stressful trying to figure it all out. Right now we're booking, like we have a tour booked, sort of, or like a tour. It's like a 4-day run. We're planning in October, where we're playing, we're doing Chicago. We're playing at this cool place called Sleeping Village.
Wow.
This is like announced and like 100% happening. Like, luckily
Chicago, but that's big.
I'm pretty stoked we're breaking into that market. It's honestly, I was kind of surprised that the venue booked us, because it's like they book like cool bands there. Like, have you ever listened to that band Mama?
No, I'm not familiar, but I want to.
They're pretty new. They just have this new record that came out that's like, seems like it's getting pretty popular. I just saw them open for Snail Mail down in Florida, but when I was on vacation with Hotline TNT. But they're headlining there, and I was just kind of surprised that we're playing there. But they have like it's like a weekly thing where it's like $1 beers, $5 tickets. It's like a showcase for like up and coming artists type of thing. So we're playing one of those with this band called Jackie Boy, who's really good. They're from Indiana, and it's got like members of like Angel Dust, and like the drummer of that band Howdy is the drummer of Jackie Boy. If anyone knows any of those bands,
I know who Howdy is.
Like with the two V's, yes, you know what I'm talking about.
I'm very familiar with Howdy. It's like they're a very good band.
Yeah, the drummer of that band is the drummer in Jackie Boy.
Oh, no kidding. That's awesome.
Yeah. Jackie Boy is great. It's like 90s, like feel good summer. Like it sounds like Third Eye Blind, kind of. Like it's like, it's sick. You should check it out. Or like Dinosaur Jr. kind of. It's like up your alley for sure. Yep.
Oh yeah, definitely. Like
fuzzy, feel good summer rock.
That's awesome. Wow.
So we're doing two shows with them. The first one's in Chicago, and then we're playing the next night in Bloomington, Indiana, which is their hometown.
Cool. Then you go back to their home and
that's really cool. And then Friday we're gonna play in Columbus with some bands that we played with out here before. Because we've honestly made some, there's a cool scene in Columbus. We've like played with two or three bands from there. And they're all like, there's some cool shit going on out there. So we're playing, I think we're going to end up doing four shows in a row, just kind of like working our way back from Chicago, you know?
Yeah, it's that little Midwest kind of.
Yeah, a little bit.
Midwest tour.
We're playing Morgantown also in October, but that's like, there's kind of a running joke around Pittsburgh that Morgantown is just a suburb of Pittsburgh music scene, because it's like an hour and 15 minutes away. And like, so there's just a lot of Morgantown bands that play up here and a lot of Pittsburgh bands that play down there. So,
so they just kind of swap.
Yeah. So it's like a little bit of an out of town show, but we're just going to drive home after the show. You know? Right. So it doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but it'll be cool to play Morgantown. We're playing there in October too. So.
You got to get these Connecticut fucking shows going.
Yeah,
on,
we're coming, honestly, because our drummer is from Western Mass, so he has lots of connections in like the New England area. So
yeah,
we were just texting the other day, but he was like, "We got to hit New York and New England," and I was like, "Yeah, you're right." Like,
bro, you got to play a show at the Space here in Hamden, man.
Is that the place?
That's the place, dude. That's the place.
I've seen Hamden pop up on some flyers.
Yeah, the Space is an awesome fucking venue. It's really, really dope. It's been around for a while.
And is it like a small room or is it like a bigger room?
There's actually, there's like a, it was kind of like the one venue you were talking about, where there's like the smaller room and then there's like a bigger, that's kind of what they do there. There's like a smaller room where sometimes some people play and then they have the big stage, you know, where
I think a lot of cities have places like that.
They do, and they have like a really nice bar and everything there too. The space is a really sick venue.
All right, I'm noted.
Yeah, they're awesome. There's a few other, there's also a brewery over in New Haven called the Beer Racks. Mm-hmm. And they have like a few different breweries there, but they also have like a big stage. A lot of Connecticut indie bands play.
Nice.
And so that's another like really good place to play. And
yeah.
So there's a couple like big, you know.
Yeah. Places that's, you can play. We definitely want to get up to New England for sure. And we're like Only Sibling is like we're friends with bands who play up there a lot and stuff. So
yeah,
I think it could happen. Like I remember even when we were planning our little weekend with Only Sibling, we were talking about maybe playing like Connecticut. Maybe he brought that up. But I guess he kind of booked that part, so it didn't work out. Yeah. But
don't worry, I'll get you guys pizza
next time. We're sleeping on your floor.
The elite pizza capital of the world over here.
Right.
You've been missing out for a long time.
We'll find out. there's like
pizza, bro.
Pittsburgh pizza is like honestly not just impressive. So like
I don't doubt it.
I'm always dying for new good. There's not a lot of good pizza spots around here.
No, it's not New Haven.
It's not New Haven.
Hey, listen, New Haven's like a what, like 20-minute drive from Hamden. So just saying, like, that's the place to go, man. If you're here, like, go to New Haven, get some fire pizza and like insomnia cookies
we have insomnia cookies down here.
That's a spot.
Yeah, we'll make it up there. That's honestly, I feel like that is more important or more of a goal to me than like the LP, like you were kind of talking about earlier.
Touring,
that's kind of what I want to get out of music. It's just I want to see the world with like my friends.
That's awesome.
Just
man.
Like be doing cool. Like, what's a better way to? I mean, obviously, like. It's not the most ideal way to vacation on tour. You don't get to see too much of the city. You go and hang out in front of the venue for a couple hours, but like, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I just want to meet cool people, go cool places.
Yeah. Like, you want to stray too far. And then you're like, oh shit. Like showtime's in like an hour. Like,
they're calling you for sound check.
Crap. Okay. I'll be right there. Like, my bad. Sorry. I was just checking out this fire ass pizza in New Haven, man. I couldn't help myself. That was funny too. Like they actually put the Insomnia Cookies to right next to the College Street Music Hall in New Haven. So I'm like those damn geniuses. I'm like,
they know what's up.
Smart. Got the guys that the kids going having the munchies at the show. It's like
Ross. Ross on Friends, he's selling like Girl Scout cookies. He's like, I started going to NYU at midnight.
Yeah.
It's makes so much money.
That's all you got to do.
Is New Haven pizza like a style? Like, what's it? Or is
yes.
It,
yes.
What's it like?
A lot of it is like thinner crust. Like,
okay.
Sort of. Yeah. It's like sometimes some places will tend to maybe overcook the crust a little bit. Some people are a little. Like little pussies about it, but it's like it's really not that bad. Like
gotcha.
It's awesome. Yeah, it's like really good thinner crust like pizza. My favorite's Zapardi's in West Haven is like amazing.
Word.
best sausage pizza on the planet.
So. I'm admittedly a thicker crust guy, but I can definitely appreciate.
Listen, I can tolerate thick crust. Like it's not bad. Like.
Pan
like
pizza
it. Yeah no I mean I as long as it's not the lasagna that they're serving in Chicago, like I'm okay with it.
Oh my god, yeah, I remember I went to AAW and Brandon, like, you know, Brandon,
oh yeah, took me of
to,
course.
He
yeah.
took me to get Chicago pizza. Yeah, it was something.
It was an experience.
Yeah, it was edible.
It was this man just said it was edible. Oh god. that's amazing. What's the favorite place that you've been to so far when you've been touring around?
So yeah, like I said, we pretty much have only played Binghamton, so we don't actually have too much experience touring around yet. I'm trying to think of what I don't think, because Binghamton was kind of funny because we so there's kind of like he's like a spiritual fifth member of the band, our friend Hunter. He lives he lives with Jared and Keith, so he lives at the basement venue, and you know what I mean. He's like a really cool visual. He's like a cinematographer. Like he's really
nice.
Cool. So he has a projector and he'll like project visuals behind us while we play sometimes and stuff. It's really cool to have him around. He's taking like all of our photographs too.
Just gonna say, he's kind of like the one taking videos.
Yeah,
and like totally. That's awesome to have.
Yeah, any photographs we post is pretty much almost always taken by him. But he has his camp in like central PA, kind of like towards like State College. And I've been there a couple times, but like Joey and Keith have been there a bunch more times. And it was funny because we kind of like invited him to the show. Like, you're like, you want to come to Binghamton with us or whatever? And he was like, oh no, I'm going up to like my camp for the weekend. And we're like, oh, cool. With his friend Jimmy. And so we're driving to the gig and we're like halfway there. Sorry, this doesn't answer your question at all, but I'm just telling the story.
No, it's
but,
I like this.
We're driving to the gig and we're like halfway there. And then we like, all of a sudden we like pass this sign. I forget the name of the state park where the camp is, but we pass a sign for the park and we're like, wait, what? We're like, that's how you get to Hunter's Camp. And we like, we're going to Binghamton with like, this is also like a common DIY touring thing. We have no idea where we're going to sleep this night. We're kind of like, eventually we're like, all right, we'll probably just drive back through the night if we absolutely have to. But we're like, also, well, maybe we'll just like crash in like a Walmart parking lot for a couple hours and then like wake up and, you know, we're like, hopefully someone cool will offer us a spot at the venue. Like I put up touring bands in Pittsburgh sometimes. I'll just let them crash in my house.
The Walmart parking lot's undefeated.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. It's a staple. It's a staple. But so yeah, we don't know what we're doing, but we like halfway through, it's like 3 hours on like a 5.5 hour, 6 hour drive. We're like, oh shit, that's like the state park. And so we're like, there's no service at Hunter's Camp. And we know this, but we're like, all right, all of us are going to like quadruple text Hunter and like ask him if we can crash at his camp on the way back from the show.
That's genius. And
we're like, he has no service, but we know if he like happens to go outside in like a certain area, like it'll come through. And so luckily, like eventually, like 4 or 5 hours later, he texted us and was like, oh, yeah, like no problem. Like, come on by. You know what I mean?
That's awesome.
So we ended up kind of driving back through the night, like 3.5 hours, and got there at like 3 a.m.
That's sick.
So, yeah, we haven't. But we did eat at a really fire place at his campground where there's like a really like it's like a really small run. Like just like one chef in there with like his two daughters, like like the only place on his campground you can eat. But they make like really good like food, like hot food. Wow. So got some like fire pierogies there and some Mexican Cokes, you know what I mean? Like the good cane sugar.
Yes.
And so we ate there. It was kind of cool to be able to just come back from the gig and be in like a nice like nature, like nice cabin like that we're familiar with and stuff, after like thinking we were gonna just sleep on some stranger's floor that night.
Listen to this, folks. If you're getting into live music, listen to this man's stories right now. Because it is not all glory and like
stuff.
Like this is the type of crap that you deal with.
And even like I said, like, cause I know it's like tough for bands who go on tour and they have nowhere to stay. So I'll offer to put bands up at my house. And so there's like a couple bands who have stayed here and stuff that we've played with. And just hearing some of their horror stories about like places they've stayed on tour is just like insane to me.
Oh,
like just hearing about them, just like just some like creepy weird guys like, yeah, you guys can stay at my house. And then like they go and it's just like filthy and it's just like this dude is like a crack addict or some shit, you know.
There might be some bodies in the closet.
Yeah, right.
Like possibly, maybe.
That's why like me and my girlfriend, I've had like a longtime girlfriend of like 8 years almost. So we live together in like a 2-bedroom house and she's like, you know, she keeps it clean and stuff. So I'm sure touring bands are probably pretty appreciative when they come by and it's like,
they're like, thank God.
an actual big house where they can like kind of shower and like, you know what I mean?
Oh my God, there's not stains all over the floor.
Right. Like, yeah.
What? Where am I?
just when my cat throws up on the floor. we have two cats and we've had bands come here and like I didn't think about this till it happened where like the one guy was allergic to cats and we're like, oh shit. He's like popping Benadryl on the couch. He's like, I'm good.
Oh, you don't have no problem sleeping.
Some people will be like, yeah, I'm allergic to cats. And then they're like playing with my cat. So I'm like, they can't be that allergic. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it can't be that bad. Come on.
It's funny though.
That's funny. So I actually wanted to ask you this earlier and I completely forgot. So what bands do you feel like have influenced you the most? I know you kind of mentioned a few, but like, I just curious, like what bands have kind of influenced you the most in your guys' sound and, or maybe even just individually, you know, that would even be cool to know.
Yeah. Obviously. So the biggest influences in Rex are probably like Lou Reed is definitely a huge influence, like Lou Reed and the Velvet Underground, very much in like like in sort of in his vocal delivery. My vocal delivery is sort of like somewhere in between like Lou Reed and like Andrew Savage from Parquet Courts. It's like a little bit, it's like a little yelling, but like kind of monotone-ish a little bit, kind of going back and forth. I can't really sing. So I just kind of, I kind of operate in that whole like,
I
Tom Petty's kind of there. Kurt Vile's kind of there too. Kurt Vile sings, but
your voice is good, man. Like, it's like, it's good. It's good for what you're doing. Like,
it's not a tradition. Yeah. It's not a traditional, like, you know,
not everybody's Mariah.
Not a lot of vocal melodies and shit like that.
There's not everybody's just Ariana Grande, Mariah Carey. Not everyone has to hit the whistle notes all the goddamn time. I like to call it vocal masturbation, but yeah, you know, it's like, you don't always need to do
anyone doing the national anthem at like a sporting event.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Lou's a huge influence. Also just like a lot of his songs are just like the same three chords, and it's just like really simple open chords. It's just like D, G, and A. Like that's like a lot of like Lou's solo stuff, and like Velvet Underground songs are just like that. And that is definitely really inspiring to me. A lot of my songs, like especially the rhythm guitar parts, if you just break them down, are just like really simple. Like they had like really simple two parts, like three or four chord progressions. And so that's pretty inspiring to me. Hmm. Parquet Courts is definitely a pretty big influence, I think. Just like their way of kind of like, they're sort of punk, but they're not like a total like hardcore punk thing. But I think that has been, that kind of bleeds into our music a lot. We're also pretty, like some of our songs are kind of a little bit twangy. Some of our twangiest stuff hasn't actually been released yet. We have like a new song with like slide guitar on it and stuff. So we're definitely pretty, there's a lot of influence from like the Silver Jews. Like I think David Berman is probably like the greatest lyricist of all time. And he's a big influence on me. I'm trying to just like emulate him on a lot of shit.
I noticed you've been listening to a lot of Paul Westerberg too. So,
yes. Yeah. The Replacements are like one of my like probably like top three favorite bands ever. And I'm like low key obsessed with them. I read that there's a really good book called Trouble Boys that Bob Mayer wrote about them. And it's like, hands down the best like rock book I've ever read, and I'm like gonna reread it again for like the third time pretty soon probably.
You guys also kind of remind me of Husker Du a little bit too.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, we love Husker, and some people have told us that too, which is kind of cool. Yeah. I've been told Grant Hart song specifically is what I was told that Rex Tycoon sounds like more than like Bob's songs. But
big
Husker Du fan. I think that's like one of the greatest bands who ever lived, honestly. Yes. I was just listening to Bob Mould on like Wrestling Observer Live, like an archive, like a couple of weeks ago. I was just like, for some reason, going down the Bob Mould and WCW rabbit hole.
That's crazy.
It's super fascinating. He was on Jericho's podcast this year. That's what made me kind of like,
which I
don't listen to, which I don't really listen to, but I just saw that he was on it. And I was like, oh, right, Bob Mould wrestling. but yeah, Husker Du. Yeah, Husker Du is an influence for sure. Yeah, Replacements are a big one. I think that we kind of, I was always pretty wary from calling Rex a punk band. I think live it like translates a lot. We play a lot more high energy live, and like a lot of people have mentioned that they were like, the recordings are a bit more chill, but like live, we play everything just like a hair faster live, and like I think I definitely just yell a bit more live, and so it's a bit more like of a punk energy. And like, so punk is definitely a big influence on the project as well. I was always kind of afraid of being a poser calling ourselves a punk band, but enough people have been like, nah, you guys are like punk as fuck. For me to be like, we're kind of a punk band.
And I think it's cool that you guys do that, because like a lot of some bands just like will play their stuff just like straight studio, just like same exact, like just sitting there playing the same thing. So that's good that you guys kind of vary it up and like give it a different experience. You know, it's like, yeah, you know, I could listen to the record at home if it sounds like that. You know, I want to hear a little something, you know, something that will maybe a little more high energy like you guys are doing in live.
Yeah, it's just kind of the songs, just kind of natural, I feel like, to just kind of play them like that. And I think we're honestly just kind of at the mercy of our drummer Jared, it feels like, too, because, you know, he's setting the tempo, and like sometimes he just like, you can just tell tell he's like pumped that night. Sometimes you can tell because he'll just be hitting like so hard. And I'm like, oh, we're playing these songs like pretty fast right now. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You can, because it's like, you have that element.
I like that.
You have that element of improv, I think, you know, and it's like, you can just kind of do whatever you want. You know, the people aren't going to get like mad at you. It's just
that's a big thing I like about Lou Reed and Kurt Vile. Both is that their vocal, just the way they write their vocals and lyrics kind of, leaves a lot of room for them. I don't know if you're into either of those guys and you end up if you watch their live stuff, like Kurt Vile, like never sings the same song the same way, like twice, because like just the way he writes his lyrics, they're like, he's just kind of talking over them most of the time. So he can never like exactly replicate it the same way. So he's always kind of saying the lines and like different like cadences and stuff like that, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I like that a lot. So I kind of, and I'll do that too, where I'll just like change the words to a song like on the fly, just because like I don't know, just because it's fun. It's boring to play the song the same way every time. I like to kind of go out, like sometimes at practice, like we'll be playing this one song that's, it's kind of inspired by Sweet Jane a little bit, just like the vocals. And so like at practice, I'll just start doing the Sweet Jane vocals over our song. And I'll just like totally wig out like the rest of the, like Keith will be like, wait, what song are we playing? And I'll be, it's because I'm just like, I don't know, I just like to mess with people. And I kind of do that live sometimes a little bit. The more comfortable you get playing live, like the more you just like are willing to like
let loose.
Yeah, and it's kind of like the Replacements thing too, where they were like a notoriously like insanely drunk live band. We're not a crazy drunk live band, honestly, but like I like bands like that, and so we take like small influences from stuff like that.
Yeah, I think there's a good balance between like good drunk and like bad drunk
playing. Yeah, totally. Yeah, and that's the fascinating thing about
I unfortunately saw Everclear, and that was that was a bad drunk playing.
Like, yes, yeah, that sounds, yeah, because that's not the type of band who would do good drunk on purpose, or what, no, you know what I mean?
No, it's not good. So yeah, so there's definitely a good balance of strength.
But, that's for sure.
Yeah, don't go on stage where you can barely sing, you know. Let's not do that, but like enough like where you got the good buzz going, where you're like, totally, I'm good. Like,
some people are just like some people are entertaining when they're like a drunk rock band, like not drunk in the sense that they're playing the songs bad, although they kind of are playing them bad, but like I don't know, I like that shit. Like, we played with one of my favorite bands from around here, this local band who's been around for like years. We played with them, and they just like, they were definitely kind of drunk and like just like winging it through their set. And it was just like really funny. And like, they were just like talking shit on people in between the songs. And like, but it was like good. I don't know. It probably turned some people off in the room, but I loved it.
I think at the end of the day, you need to treat playing live like it's just a fun experience. Like,
totally.
It's like, it's not life or death. You know,
one thing that people have said to us is like that was like fun. Like, that's like a word that people use a lot when they come up to us, like like people like that we don't know, just like strangers after the set will be like, that was really fun. And I was like, I feel like that's a word that I hear a lot, and I'm like, good, like that's what I want to emulate as a band. Like, I would just want to be like, it to be a fun experience.
Yeah, and not some like rigid, like, we have to do the songs exactly this way, like we stand here like statues and like, you know, anxious as all hell, and like, yeah, you play tight, people see that.
Yep. Yeah, I think it's important to have fun and just kind of promote that energy instead of being like really pretentious or anything like that.
Right. Yeah. No, 100%, man. I have another good question for you. And if you had to pick only three albums you could listen to the rest of your life, what would they be? So I know. I know. I love just like asking this to people because they are just like squirm.
Yeah. I feel like a good way to think of it is just not think too much about it, and then you'll get your answers. So I'm gonna say off the top of my head, if I only had three albums, I'm not gonna think too much about how like I want to pick three different kinds of music, because like that's boring. I'm just gonna pick the three best rock records I can think of. All right. So I would probably take, if I could cheat, I would take like a special edition of one of these albums, and it has like all the out tracks and like the live songs. But I would take I would take a Replacements record for sure, because I just like love Paul Westerberg and the Replacements so much. I always go back and forth on what my favorite album of theirs is, but I honestly think I would take It's called Dead Man's Pop. It was actually their record called Don't Tell a Soul from like 1989, but they recently, a couple of years ago, they reissued it. They kind of, it was a record that the label took from them and then like resequenced it and like added a bunch of stuff. So like the true version sort of came out like a couple of years ago. They re-released it and they actually retitled it. So it's called Dead Man's Pop now.
Interesting.
Huh. Yeah. It just sounds like the producers like in the '80s, like they got some producer to come in afterwards and like add a bunch of like stuff that was really popular in the '80s to like make the songs like more radio friendly essentially. Right. But they were actually trying to make something that sounded like timeless. Like you couldn't tell when it was recorded. So I honestly think that's like the Replacements record I've been like obsessed with for the past like year or two.
Yeah.
I honestly think I would take that. So I'm going to say Dead Man's Pop by the Replacements. I'm going to say New York by Lou Reed because I'm just listing things I'm obsessed with at the moment, but it's also his 1989 record. Wow. But it's, if you've never listened to New York by Lou Reed and you're listening to this podcast, you should stop this podcast and go listen to New York by Lou Reed because it is like the most lyrically dense thing ever. It's pretty much his attempt at taking the great American novel and turning it and combining it with the great American rock and roll record. So a lot of the songs are him essentially like talking. I've heard him say in interviews, he like did the vocals in a way. So it's supposed to be like, he's just like sitting there next to you, like telling you the stories. But I honestly think it's some of the most like crazy, insane songwriting I've ever like heard on an album. It's just like, yeah, just go listen to it. Read the lyrics while you listen to it. Just crazy. And it's just all over like three chords, but like every song is like, just like classic, like Lou Reed riffing. So I would probably take those two right now. And then I would also take, it's called The Natural Bridge by Silver Jews, which is his second record. Hmm. I don't know. David Berman is like a huge influence. I don't know if you know him, but he was like a friend of the Pavement guys. And, he had a project called Purple. He died a couple of years ago, but he had a project called Purple Mountains that was coming out. And, he was getting ready to tour, with that before he, sadly died, but he's a huge influence. If, anyone's never listened to Silver Jews, he's definitely like the best lyricist ever. And also I just want to throw out there that John Prine is definitely a huge influence on the band as well. And, probably like my favorite country artist ever. And I take a lot of the John Prine and David Berman like incorporate humor into their songs in a way that's very fascinating to me, where they're not joke songs at all. Yeah. But like in the same song, they can like legit like write a line that will make you cry and like tears of sadness. And then in the same way, like twist it with some weird sense of like almost like dark humor.
Yeah. Right.
And I think I've definitely like tried to emulate that in certain songs. And so damn, yeah, honestly I might have to take like John Prine's first album. All right, yeah, I picked four, but I'm taking John Prine's self-titled, Natural Bridge by Silver Jews, New York by Lou Reed, and right. that if you listen to those four albums, I bet that would give you a definitive taste of like my songwriting, honestly.
Those are some very cool and interesting choices.
I could have said some like Nevermind by Nirvana and
yeah. It's like I feel like you're like a songwriter at heart, but like you're also love like the straight up like up tempo just yep. You know, in your face stuff too. So it's like I think it gives you guys like a very like interesting spectrum on what you guys like can do, because like you do like some really cool like singer-songwriter stuff and like Lou Reed, and then like you also just do that up-tempo punk like delivery of it sometimes, which I think is just really cool. It's
that's a good point. I never really thought of how until I kind of laid that out and you said it, like how like singer-songwritery some of my stuff is, but it is like fused with like slacker rock and like it's never like too singer-songwriter-y, the final project, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
It never ends up like that, but it always kind of starts like that, I think.
Yeah, you know, like, I know Lou Reed isn't for everybody, but
yep.
he I think definitely he has influenced so many people in terms of writing and structuring a song. And, yep. You know, I know his voice isn't like, you know, the most, you know, naturally amazing thing to listen to, but like I think he's one of those guys that when you listen more and more, you realize like how great of a songwriter he is. And,
yeah. Yeah. He's crazy. He, before the Velvet Underground, he was like, that was his job for like 10 or 15 years. Like he was just like one of those songwriters who would like write songs and then like sell them to whoever. And you know what I mean?
Right.
So he's like, he's just like a like an absolute legend, or like my God, pretty much. Of, I was just on vacation last week in Florida visiting a friend, and I was on their couch on just on my tablet, just watching Lou. This is what I do on vacation. I was just watching Lou Reed live videos on my tablet on my friend's couch, and like both my girlfriend and her like came over, like looked around my shoulder, and were like, "Oh, I thought that was like a new Vex Tycoon song." I was like, "Oh yeah, I just exposed myself to them as like a Lou Reed ripoff." She's like, he sounds just like you. I was like, "Yeah, it's the other way around."
Yeah, about that. Yeah. Oh no, man, I hear him so much in your in the stuff that you do. It's like 100%. Like I like can see it. Like. In every song that you guys do, really, like the Lou Reed and influences all over the all over Rex Tycoon. So
for sure. Yeah, if you dig Lou Reed, you'll probably dig us.
Yeah. No, that's those are a really good selection of albums. I actually you mentioned Parquet Courts before too. I definitely see that a lot in your guys' music as well. They're a really good band.
And yeah, they have
very similar to delivery as you guys have.
They're like polarizing. It's like it's almost become maybe just in like my circles I'm too like whatever, but like it's almost like uncool for me to like them amongst a lot of people, it seems like.
Really?
Yeah, it's very strange. I think I'm just too like, you know, in the bubbles, but like if you know what I mean. But like when I went to see them in Pittsburgh, and like they played, have you ever listened to, I'm probably gonna butcher his name, but it's like M. Dow Mokhtar. He's like this crazy African guitarist who's like, he's like, he like grew up listening to Hendrix and Van Halen.
Yeah,
he says, but he's kind of like blowing up, like Rolling Stone writes about him all the time, like, you know what I mean?
Oh wow.
But you should listen to him. He's just like, it's this crazy African rhythmic shit, and it's just like this guy on electric guitar like shredding over it.
That's awesome.
He went on tour with Parquet Courts, and I like saw a bunch of people I knew there, but like they were like all there for him, and they were like almost scoffing at the idea of Parquet. Like they were like leaving before Parquet Courts
played. Wow.
Like I remember I went with my buddy, and I was like, you know anyone else who's like going to the show? And he's like, no, like everyone. He's like, everyone I know is like way too cool. Like they think they're like too cool for Parquet Courts. Isn't that strange? I don't know.
Yeah. But
that's like that's where I think they've kind of like made certain people mad, or like, people like, I think like people who are like punk elitists don't like them because they're like labeled as like, I kind of get it, because if there's like, if you go to a frat party and they know one punk band, it's probably like Parquet Courts. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
No, it's like, yeah. I kind of get it. Like, I get why people, but like, I think once, when people get so popular or so, like if you play on Ellen, like Parquet Courts played on Ellen, you know what I mean? Like when you get to that point, like people aren't gonna like you just because you're at that point.
Punk scene will definitely tend to they did the same thing the Green Day back
in, right, you know, yeah, exactly, you know what I mean. Any punk band that gets like popular like that is just bound to piss off a bunch of people. I love them. Like they're like such a huge influence on us.
No, I agree. So is there any other plans that you guys have in the near future for anything? Like,
so yeah, and I can plug our upcoming shit if that's what you're asking.
Yeah, do it.
So when's this coming out, you know?
Shortly. probably tomorrow today.
Wait. Okay, so Sunday, September 4th, we are playing at the Government Center in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. We're going to play with Advertisement and a local band called I4A. Advertisement's a really good band from Seattle. They just put out something on Hardly Art, which is like a subsidiary, is that how you say that word, of Sub Pop. Definitely a cool band. Listen to them if you're in Pittsburgh, come to the show. And then we actually just, this isn't announced, it'll probably be announced by the time this comes out, but we just hopped on a show next Saturday, September 10th, at Thunderbird Music Hall in Pittsburgh. A really good band called Sleeping Witch and Saturn is putting out their second album. I don't know, they're putting out an album, it's the release show, so we're playing with them in the Supernatural, really cool kind of spacey underground hip-hop thing. We're playing with those two at Thunderbird on September 10th, And then on September 16th, we got a lot of stuff. September 16th, we're playing live on Pitt's college radio station. I wish I knew what the actual FM dial of that was, but I'm sure if you look up WPTS, you can listen online.
Yeah,
I think we're playing at 9 p.m. on September 16th.
That's awesome.
And then that weekend's not booked. October 7th, we're playing at the Government Center again with our friends Beauty from New Jersey, one of the best power pop bands out there. Definitely look them up. Again, Beauty from New Jersey. We're playing on the 7th at Government Center with them and Boy Wonders. And then on the 8th, we're playing in Morgantown the next night at a Morgantown Art Bar. And then on the October 14th, we're playing with Webbed Wing, Prize Horse, and Taking Meds on their tour. We're providing the support. We're playing Preserving Underground probably like 8 p.m., 7 p.m., something like that, October 14th. And then, yeah, we're going to be in Chicago on the 18th with Jackie Boy, Bloomington on the 19th with Jackie Boy, and then, Chicago on the 19th with Jackie Boy, Bloomington on the 20th with Jackie Boy, and then we're probably going to be in Columbus on the 21st. So definitely lots of live stuff coming up that's kind of announced, but we're going to put together like some cohesive flyers and stuff like that. So it'll make more sense. It's probably really confusing to follow as I laid it out.
That's very cool though. Listen, if you all are in the Midwest, watch out, these guys are coming your way next month.
You could just follow us on Instagram at Rex Tycoon is the best way to keep up with that kind of stuff. We just got a new shirt design in the other day that we're going to be posting soon, and we're going to be taking some Bad Habits cassette tapes on tour that have it's gonna have Bad Habits and a bunch of B-sides, and like there's like a cover of Dizzy Miss Lizzy, like the kind of in the style of the Beatles on Help. A bunch of stuff that's not going to be ever put online. So if you want to hear that shit, just come out to a show this fall, and we'll probably have a very limited run of like 25 or 30 cassettes. It's gonna be pretty cool. We're doing each cover is going to be handmade and drawn, and they'll be unique, and I got like five or six artists who are going to be in on it, and should definitely be a cool way to get some cool Rex Tycoon merch this fall.
That sounds amazing. I love that idea with the tapes having B-sides you won't hear and stuff like that. Gives you, you know, the incentivized option.
I kind of mentioned earlier, we have another tape that's in the works, but I figured this is kind of just to hold us over, because I don't know if the tapes will be ready by the big tapes. I don't know if those will be ready by the time we hit tour.
That's super awesome now. I love that. That's a great idea. I give you credit. You really seem to have this operation going, like
thanks,
your organization and like skills and your ideas are really, really good. You kind of got like a natural feel for how to promote yourselves and like get yourselves out there. Yeah, no, you got that part down, where I know a lot of musicians I've talked to really struggle with that part, and they really hate it because they really want to focus on the music part, and it is like really hard for a lot of people, I think, to kind of do what you're doing as well
with
the music part of it too. It's you know, it's a two-way street, and it's hard to balance them, but you're doing like a really good job. It's a lot of dates to have done, and your strategy with tapes and merch and everything is like kind of just out there. So power to you, man. That's pretty impressive.
It's the grind for sure. I feel like some people just don't realize that you have to grind that hard. I feel like you might get lucky and you might, you know, sit at home and record some, there was a Bandcamp article recently that you ever heard of the band Dummy? They're from LA, but they've been kind of they're like touring machines. It's crazy how much they tour. They're really good. If anyone's into like Stereo Lab or shit like that, definitely check out Dummy. We played with them in Pittsburgh. Nice. But they had this Bandcamp article that was ended up being kind of controversial within like a lot of music like dumb online music circles on Twitter and stuff like that. Most annoying places to be on earth. But just pretty much because they were saying that, like, I didn't disagree with what they were saying at all. They didn't upset me, but pretty much they were just saying that, like, no one's owed anything in the music business. You know what I mean? Like, you can sit at home and make a great rock and roll record and make a great like whatever record, but unfortunately, like, the internet or the world doesn't owe it to you to like make you big off of that or whatever. Right. So like you have like all these people who, like, there's so many good bands and artists in the world that it's insane, and it's like some of them just don't ever see the light of day. So like, yeah, pretty much you have to just try and grind and just do the best you can to like, unfortunately the music doesn't like totally speak for itself. Like you can't just like put a good album on Spotify and just like wait for it to blow up by itself. Like you gotta get out there. You gotta support like, you gotta spend money to make money. You gotta pay, yeah, you gotta lose money on tour just so that like, cause like the way I see it is like no one in Chicago is like really going to listen to us. And like, unless we go there and play for them, you know what I mean? Then they're going to be like, oh, these like, I don't know. It like legitimizes people in your eyes when you kind of do stuff like that, when you put yourself out there and you get out there to, unfortunately, it's just like a very monotonous process of sending email after email after email after email after email. But it's a grind.
You have any other, before we go, do you have any other advice for guys that are taking a leap like you guys did, and like the indie musicians that are really going to say, hey, like I'm going to really go into this deeper?
I feel like the best way is to just do it and to be involved in your local music community. Cause like, for instance, if you're just someone who's going to upload your shit online and then just like Instagram DM a bunch of people or email a bunch of people and say, hey, like, why won't you book me for a show or whatever? Like, make genuine connections with people. Like, go to local shows that you're not on, that doesn't benefit you at all. Pay to get in, talk to people, just be genuine. You know what I mean? Have a genuine connection and be a genuine support. My little kitty's coming to greet us.
We had a run in from the cat.
just be genuine though. Like, go support your scene, give back to your scene, and like the scene will eventually give back to you. And also just grind. Like you gotta just like put yourself out there, send emails to people. If you want to play in another city, just look up the venues in the cities, start sending emails. You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just be proactive and be genuine. I think those are, to put it simply, those are the best two things you can be, is proactive and genuine.
Yeah. That's the way to network in general, really. I mean,
it applies to anything in life.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you go to a career fair and you hand a business card to somebody, they're going to throw that shit out. You know, it's going to happen. They probably won't answer your email. It's like, it's all a bunch of pseudo, you know?
Right. Yeah. Like, if you send your music to someone like, in your scene, who's like, you know, respected or in a big band or whatever, a promoter, like they're probably not going to, and like, they're not going to listen to it or whatever. But if you go to a show and you run into them and you say, hey, cool Smashing Pumpkins shirt. And you say, you know, I like that band. And then you like form a connection with them. Like, then they're going to remember you. And then they're going to, you know, like they're going to want to help out people who are genuine and people who support, you know?
Yeah. Ulterior motives like the whole time, you know? It's like,
right. Yeah. Just be, you should like, if you, in my opinion, if you're making music and you want to like play music and become involved, like you should want to go to shows and want to support people and want to buy things and want to, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You should just want to do that anyways, but
yeah. No, yeah, that's I think that's really important. I think you're 100% right. I think when you're starting out, you gotta go around and you gotta like, yeah, support other people that are maybe a little more established than you are at the moment, and then you kind of make the friends and you make the connections, and then yeah, that's when things start kind of happening a little bit. But it does take some work and a lot of emailing.
Yeah. and just be genuine about it. You know, yeah, don't be a
yeah.
Yeah, I know some people like that.
Yeah, well, I won't name any names, but yeah, no, there's just some people that, yeah, hey, listen to my mixtape. That's it. And then you never hear from them again. So, yeah, no, that's not really the way to go about it. I agree. But I think that was a really good portion of advice, man, for everybody. I think we're going to bring us to end now, but is there anything else you wanted to add before we got off the air here?
Look, if you want to keep up with Rex Tycoon, just, you know, we're on all the streaming, you can find us on there. At Rex Tycoon is probably the best way on Instagram to find us. If you ever want to chat, hit us up, send us an email. Check out Shame Nap and Backpack Joe, Wish You Death, Gundy. These are all projects that other members of Rex Tycoon are in. So,
oh, awesome. Very
look cool. Up those bands for sure.
Yeah, man. Austin, thank you so much for taking the time, man. It's been way too long since I've talked to you like this.
I've been wanting to be on the podcast since you started. So yeah, glad we could set it up.
This is a great way to reconnect too. So I appreciate the time. It's nice early morning podcast. I never get to do too many of these. So that was nice too.
I gotta sling some pizzas later. So
oh yeah, of course.
You're on my schedule.
Oh yeah. I gotta ask before we go. Any fun pizza delivery stories lately? Because I've always enjoyed these from you.
So there's this one guy who lives he's a notorious address because he has I don't know how people deal with driveways, it's bad, but he is like an extremely steep, it's an incredibly steep hill and it's got potholes all over it. It's the most untamed road. Like I have a really low hanging sedan and mm-hmm. I just know how to not drive like an idiot. So I can drive up his driveway because I take my time and I drive around the potholes. A couple people have fucked their cars up on it. But anyways, it's always a big pain in the ass about who wants to go up there. But he always leaves a good tip. And lately, like the past four times I've been up there, he's been like giving me weed when I deliver to him. He just like gives me like a little bit of nugget weed every time. So that's I'm always awesome. I guess I'll suck it up and take that one. And also, I recently delivered to a thrift store. I actually have some of them right here. But I recently delivered to a thrift store and I was on my way out and I was like shopping because I have no self-control and I'm addicted to physical media. And I was like, oh, I'll buy some VHS tapes. And I was like waiting in line and they were like, are you good? Like we paid, like need anything else? I was like, oh, I'm just going to buy these tapes. And they were like, just take them. So I like kind of got tipped in like VHS tapes.
That's awesome. That's so sick.
And one of them was like a sealed 20th anniversary of Enter the Dragon with like a Bruce Lee trading card inside. And I was like, God. You could definitely sell this to like some thrifter for like $20 probably.
But that's
like,
wild.
I was like, I'll take it. So,
so sick. Oh my,
pretty much just that.
I'm so jealous right now. That sounds amazing. Oh, it's my
getting
God.
Getting tipped in weed and VHS tapes.
Lately. Enter the Dragon, freaking yeah. Bruce Lee. Oh man. That's my stuff right there.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much all the weird shit that's happened lately.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Man, thanks for coming on, man. I appreciate it, man. Follow Rex Tycoon on Instagram. I'll search him up on Spotify. Listen to what they got on there. It's great stuff. Go out to a show if you're around them in the next couple months or so. But thank you all for listening to Viral Music Hub again. I'm glad to be back. Hopefully going to make this more of a regular thing again after a long hiatus. So again, thanks all for listening and welcome back to Viral Music Hub.